Welcome back to the Mindful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jay Nickel. We have a mobile edition of the podcast in store for you today. So I can't remember when it first occurred to me, but it's always bugged me that you're largely unproductive while driving. And I spend an inordinate amount of time driving to hunts. You know, in the last month, I spent like, if you count scouting and day trips and stuff, I'm at like 80 or 100 hours driving easily in the last month just for hunting. So I was on my way home from the last hunt, and I knew I needed to do like a gear wrap-up podcast. And I was like, I wish I could record this while driving. And I've tried with my lapel mic, but the vehicle noise is just so loud. It kind of makes it overpowering, and I don't know, I just didn't find it an enjoyable listening experience, so I didn't figure most of the people listening to the podcast would either. So what I've done is I invested in a really high-quality kind of headphone mic combo that's built for sports broadcasters and really noisy stadiums, figuring my truck is no louder than a stadium. If it works for them, it should work for me too. So this is the first experiment with this new rig. If it's garbage, you won't hear any more. Don't worry about it. But if it's great, it will really open up the kind of potential for me to do a lot more. In fact, I even brought the podcasting device that I use is called a Zoom P4. And I can plug my phone directly into it, and the audio from the phone goes into that, and the audio from my microphone goes into the phone. So essentially, I could do phone interviews while I'm on the road. So I thought that would be cool, because you could do a whole series. Like, imagine phoning your other buddy who's also driving to a hunt and then recording a podcast while the two of you are driving to separate hunts. I thought that would be really cool. Anyways, hopefully this works out, because it really, you know, create an opportunity to create more content, which I'm always all about. So let's hope this works well. Now, what we're going to be doing today is going over my elk hunting gear list. Now, the reason I think this is there's actually a couple reasons why I think this is a somewhat interesting gear list. Reason number one, I'm testing a lot of new stuff, specifically apparel. Most of you will know I've primarily run Sitka for the last, 4 or 5 years. And I am running all Stone Glacier apparel on this hunt. And I hope to have a lot of reviews and a lot of different apparel, not just Stone Glacier, coming down the pipe in the near future. So that's one reason I wanted to do this review. The other reason is, I'm doing a combination of bivy hunting and truck hunting, predominantly truck hunting. And most of my gear lists are focused on the backcountry hunter. Now, I think those are valuable gear lists. I think there's good information in those gear lists, but this is a much different, and I noticed myself preparing for this differently, because you kind of have to have the ability to switch between setups, just being in the truck or switching into bivy mode and going in for, you know, 2, 3, 4 days at a time. Even how I managed my food and a bunch of other stuff is different on this hunt than most other previous hunts. So I thought it would be valuable to kind of dive into that gear list. Now, I do want to do a little bit of housekeeping first. So let's talk mindful reviews. Most of you know I created an online platform where a community of like-minded gear nerds can hang out, participate in the gear reviews that I do, buy raffle tickets for the gear that I raffle off, and lifetime members are automatically entered once a month to win kick-ass prizes. We're growing very steadily. We're currently, as of this morning, at 251 members. If this is something that interests you, or if you've seen my reviews and you want to support what I do, I don't do Patreon, I don't do anything like that, but I do mindful reviews. So if you want to support what I do or you want to participate in that community, it's mindful-reviews.com. As soon as I get home from the hunt that I'm currently embarking on in probably 12, 13 days, I will be starting my next major category-wide review and what will turn into a raffle. I'm going to be looking at 65 millimeter spotters. Now, the impetus for this review was the new Kawa 66. I have a new Kawa 66. Everybody's been waiting on this thing. Everybody's curious how it stacks up to a variety of other spotters. So as soon as I get home, I'm going to kick that one into high gear. Might even try and do another group viewing experience with some of the members from Mine for Reviews. See if I can get access. Dan is a good buddy, and we went out to his place last time. See how busy he is. Maybe we could go back out to his place. It was really well set up for what we did, and he was it was very hospitable for him to have us out. Anyways, that's going to be coming down the pipe. I have a ton of reviews that are on track. So if you haven't joined already, now is a great time to join. The next bit of information is kind of like a request for help, I guess you could say, or even just some advice. I am headed to Colorado. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with my October. I started looking around. I was able to put my hands on a mule deer tag for one of the Southwest units. Not like a crazy premium unit, but it does look to have, you know, healthy mule deer numbers. And I can also buy an over-the-counter elk tag in that same unit. My mule deer tag is actually good for 3 units. So if anybody, you know, listens to my podcast, you're from Colorado, or you have some Colorado hunting experience, drop me a line. I would love to pick your brain. It's my first time going to Colorado. I've hunted Wyoming just north of there, but I've never been to Colorado before. I'm super excited to go. It's going to be during second rifle season, which I know can start to get a bit dicey with weather and stuff. So that's even some of the more practical parts of the hunt that I would like some help with. Just, you know, the logistics and what should I be worried about and what are road conditions typically like and this type of stuff. So if you've got any of that kind of info and you wouldn't mind sharing it with me, jay@mindfulhunter.com. That would be super appreciated. Now, the third thing that's kind of off topic, but kind of on topic, has to do with mindset. And I was having this conversation with my wife the other night, and she said, you know, you need to talk about this on the podcast. I would just like to take a brief moment that say this podcasting while driving thing might be one of the best decisions I've ever made. This is perfect. Literally just cruising along, killing time, speaking into a microphone. It's like a couple of my favorite things all wrapped up into one. Anyways, I was talking to her about mindset, and I wasn't even directly talking to her about mindset. She said something about, you know, are you going to get one, or do you think you'll be successful on this trip? And I looked at her and I said, oh, something is going to die this trip. I can guarantee you that. And it was, I think, the seriousness in my tone, or the look on my face. She's like, she kind of turned to me. She goes, oh, this is interesting. I haven't heard you talk like that in a long time. She's like, that's how you used to talk about hunting, but you kind of got away from that. And let me give you some kind of background. When I first started hunting, not that I haven't always been dedicated, but I was like almost unhealthily obsessive, and I would be so sure I was going to kill, and then I would come home after failing and I would be really depressed. I'd kind of be a piece of shit to be around for a week or two. And it got to the point where my wife was like, listen, man, I want you to do what you love doing, but if you're going to come home and act like an asshole, you're going to have to find another hobby. And she was 100% right. She's already taken one for the team by watching the kid in the house while I disappear into the woods for 2 weeks. She doesn't deserve to have me come home and act like a dick. And so in the process of kind of trying to reframe my perspective, somewhere along the line, I was trying to explain to her, and it's like, I think there's like a pendulum. On one side of the pendulum, there is ultimate confidence and assurance that you are 100% going to kill no matter what. And on the other side of the pendulum, there is, you know what? We're going to go out there. I'm going to give it an honest effort. And whatever's meant to happen is going to happen. Now, I think people with different personalities probably more naturally align to one side of the pendulum and the other. I also think there's the matter of aligning with your individual skill set. I think at the beginning of my career, my confidence was not supported by my skill set. Like, I had more confidence than I deserved to have. And I think that's where that cognitive dissonance came from. That frustration, that depression, was that I wasn't able to operate in reality about how at the same level that I thought I was. Now, that's not to say there isn't a psychological element to hunting. Like, I do believe there is a juju or a chi or whatever you want to call it. Like, some people in golf, when you start to get off, they say you've got the yips. Because here's the deal. Back like around 2019, 2020, I had a string of 6 hunts where I killed every single hunt. So 6 hunts in a row, I went out and I killed. And so killing almost became a sort of foregone conclusion for me. Like, I just became convinced that this is what was going to happen. I think there was some luck involved there. I think there were some other factors. I don't think I was a particularly great hunter. But regardless of that fact, I guarantee that at least on some of those 6 hunts, it was my confidence, no matter how delusional it was, that actually helped me kill. And it was that being in that flow state and taking the pressure off and being at ease with, like, yeah, I'm going to go out and I'm going to kill. And that's just what's going to happen. And feeling that at like a deep, genuine, sincere level, like not some bullshit pep talk that I'm giving to myself so that, you know, I can, you know, convince myself that I'm going to be successful. No, I mean like a deep-rooted, honest confidence. And anyways, I lost that somewhere along the way. I think maybe running the channel and the Instagram, I think some of that has to play with it. Like, I'm very firm that when I come home from a hunt and I don't kill, that it's to be viewed as a failure. And every single time I come back, people start arguing with me and, oh, you need to appreciate the opportunities and you need to see the learning, you know, challenges for what they are. And like, all of these things are true, but I feel that sometimes you got to shut out the noise. This is a really weird line. You got to walk it in business. You got to walk it in relationships. You got to walk it in life. Like, how much do we listen to other people? Because while I think it's important, I think there is also, I don't know how to put this, but it's like there is an element of confidence in your own vision. That when you, like, okay, let's look at like mindful reviews. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know how many people told me mindful reviews wouldn't work? Or how many people told me there wasn't a way to create a career in the hunting industry without, you know, getting down on your knees for a sponsorship? If I'd have actually listened to those people and I had allowed them to change my mind, as rational as they seem, I would have talked myself out of my own dream. And now look at where we are. You know, Mindful Reviews is coming up on a year anniversary. I'm very optimistic we're going to be able to break 300 members. I'm well on my way to quitting my day job. My life is, you know, becoming nothing but hunting and my family. Like, it's literally, I have crafted a dream existence because I was a contrarian, because I wouldn't listen to the people around me. But again, it's kind of dangerous because you can be delusional and you do need people in your life that you trust that are grounded and that help ground you. So I want you to like take that with a grain of salt. But I want to bring this all the way back to mind frame now. I think because I was successful on this hunt last year, and I have some spots, and visualization is a huge part of success for me. Like when I used to compete a lot in jiu-jitsu, and I would visualize myself winning the matches. I would also visualize myself losing matches, because I think if we don't accurately create a mental image of what things look like when they go off the rails, we get surprised by it when it actually happens. But if we've already created those mental images, then when it does happen in reality, it's like, oh, I know what to do during these circumstances. So I will visualize winning, I will visualize losing. But one of the tricky parts with hunting is that when you've never been to a unit or a state or a province or a location where you're about to go hunting, it makes it very difficult to visualize things there. And I know it might seem silly, but I strongly believe like the detail and the level of articulation that you can have in your vision heavily impacts the weight with which having that vision will help dictate a potential outcome. Like you can't just vaguely visualize yourself succeeding at something. You need to like, okay, here's another example. So hiccups, you know, everybody's always like, how do you get rid of the hiccups? I can remember trying to scare people. I can remember, you know, drinking water upside down, holding my breath. The one thing that once I discovered it that always helps me stop my hiccups is I visualize my lungs breathing in and out on a regular pattern. Now, I don't just visualize my chest going up and down. I don't just visualize like vague, you know, sacks of air filling up. I literally think about the capillaries and the blood vessels and the air sacs and the blood and the tissue and the cells, like what my lungs look like almost on a microscopic level. And I visualize those as they would in real life, inflating and deflating. And when I visualize them with that level of detail, within 5 to 10 seconds, my hiccups go away every single time. Now, somebody could just say, well, it's just a meditative exercise and it's because you're calming yourself down. And my response is, yeah, well, so what? It works. And the reason I'm able to achieve such a state of relaxation is because of the detail I'm visualizing in. And that level of detail requires such a disciplined focus that your level of relaxation you're able to get is that much stronger. I would argue the same things about the feats we try to accomplish. I don't care if it's a jiu-jitsu match. I don't care if it's a PR at the gym. I don't care if it's a hunt. The more you force yourself to visualize in extreme detail the course of events unfold that are going to lead to your success, the more focus it's requiring of you. And the more focus that you apply, the greater the likelihood of success in reality. And so when we go to different units, that's really hard to do because you don't know what it looks like. You don't know what the trailhead looks like. You don't know what the forest cover is going to look like. You don't know where the animals are going to be. You don't want to know where the animals are not going to be. You don't know any of this stuff. So it makes it really hard to visualize. So bringing it back to this year, I know where I'm going. I know what the trailheads look like. I think I know where the animals are going to be based on where they were last year. And this has contributed to the pendulum for me swinging back to this, you know, kind of, you know, delusional, like not, delusional is the wrong word, but this irrational level of obsessed confidence that I am going to be successful. And I think for me, that's a lot of what has been missing for the last little while. I don't know exactly how long. All you have to do is watch my hunt films, and no one's ever going to question my work ethic. But can I tell you with certainty that on the last three or four films that I've, or hunts that I've filmed over the last year, that I have been acting with the confidence that I was going to kill no matter what. I can't. I can tell you that I was prepared to exert as much effort as was necessary, and I no problem with work ethic, but I think I lacked the confidence, and I don't know what percentage of success you could attribute to the juju, to the chi, to the confidence, to the cockiness, to the whatever. You see this happen with UFC fighters all the time. Like, the people who fall off after being on top for five or six fights, there's two main contributing factors. The first one is tape. So all fights get recorded, and people watch the tape of the fighters that they're going to face. And all fighters have patterns. And you get to a certain point when there is so much tape on you that all of your patterns become shown. So at that point, the people who have more patterns or harder to decipher patterns stay on top longer, like the more complex fighters, because their systems are harder to break down. The more simpler fighters, they get on top, they have a couple good fights, and then they fall off, because once you crack their code, everybody knows what the solution is, and they're much easier to beat. But here's the other, and I would argue more important element. It's the irrational confidence that they have in themselves actually creates their reality. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, they are so assured of victory that they almost will it into being. And I'm not that woo-woo. I don't think like the universe provides and all that horse shit. No, I think when you are that confident, you enter a whole new flow state with a whole new level of focus. You are faster, you are sharper, you do see things quicker, you think less, you act more. You are a better fighter because you believe you're a better fighter. But then once that confidence gets shook, that is equally self-fulfilling. Because then you're like, oh, what if I'm not fast enough? That causes you to think a little bit more, causes you to act a little bit less, you're not quite as fast, bang, you get tagged. And then it's like this vicious cycle. As soon as they start to slide, it's like, look at Ronda Rousey, man. Like, just nuked. 2-3 bad fights, chick's useless. Listen, I think she was great, but when she fell off hard. And the reason she fell off so hard was this confidence in herself. Like, it was just evaporated. And she didn't have that same oomph. You know what I'm saying? I feel like that's where I've been at, and no, I'm not a world champion at hunting, but I think all of these things still apply. And I think confidence, you know, I wish I could remember how John Danaher, he's a jiu-jitsu coach who coaches guys like George St. Pierre, Gordon Ryan, a bunch of the world's greatest jiu-jitsu players. And I can't remember how he phrases this, but essentially, like, confidence is gained through reality. Like, you need to put yourself in situations, you need to excel in those situations, you need to notice that data, and that gives you confidence, right? So I'm not saying that you can go out on your first hunt and just, you know, step into it with brass balls and be like, I'm killing a monster buck. That's unlikely, but somehow we need to find the ability to have that confidence, because I do think that is part of what has been at play with some of the lack of success that I've been experiencing lately. And so part of the reason why I'm talking about this is because I'm figuring it out in my own head. Like, how do I come to that holy grail place where I'm confident in my abilities and I have the like mental surety so that I behave and act in ways that are most likely to create a successful outcome without being delusional. You know what I mean? Without, so that I start getting, you know, complacent and I don't do my homework and I don't, you know, train as hard and I don't do as much e-scouting. Like, I don't want to do that either. But I think, like, it just started to naturally come back on this hunt. And it was so funny. So I had this conversation with my wife maybe 2-3 nights ago. And then this morning, no, it wasn't this morning because I got up before she left. I did go say goodbye. It was last night after she got home. She's like, when are you going to be back? I'm like, I'm going to try and come back as soon as I can. And she's like, but you're not coming back until you kill something, are you? And I said, no, I'm not. I said, something has to die. I will be successful on this hunt. And she made some remark about me going feral in the woods and growing a beard and her never seeing me again. But she's known me long enough that she knows the difference, you know, between when I'm like heading out the door with like a hope and a prayer that I am going to be successful and me going out there certain in the outcome. You know what I'm saying? So anyways, I'm not sure if that whole kind of thought process strung together for you or not. I'm not sure if it is something that you've considered yourself, but I 100% believe that there is a mental aspect to this stuff, and it's not just not quitting. I think that gets talked about a lot. I think it should get talked about a lot. I think it's very important. But I also think there's a difference between just not quitting and behaving like you're going to be successful no matter what. And so that's the theme for this hunt. I am going to be fucking relentless. I will not stop until an elk hits the ground. Anyways, that's enough of that. Now, let's get on to the gear list for my 2023 truck/bivy elk hunt. All right, so let's start at the top of the list. We are going to be using the XO K4 5000. So this is the first time I've taken the 5000 out. I normally run the 7200. Now, the reason I'm running the 5000, obviously, is that I don't need the capacity of the 7200. And in fact, if I had a 3600, I would probably take that, because the most I'm going to need to go in for is 2 to 3 days at a time. But in lieu of the 3600, the 5000 should be great. Also, this is one of the first times, other than a few single day scouting trips, that I've taken their final production version of the K4 out. I had a prototype version. I forgot how much better they made the lid. The lid in the prototype version, where the zipper was kind of a pain in the ass. It didn't open up the entire mouth of the lid. So getting things like your lunch and bigger objects in and out was kind of challenging. And I really like the new lid on the final production pack. Also, I recently bought a Sil Nylon rain cover, one by MEC, Mountain Equipment Company, no longer co-op, bought by a private equity organization a couple years ago. It's like Canada's version of REI for all you people down in the States. And I was looking around everywhere because I kind of got bit in the ass on our sheep hunt. I stopped carrying a rain pouch for my backpack years ago and instead just put the things that matter most into dry bags. And then if my bag gets wet, it gets wet. But my hunting partner had a really good kind of thing. He's like, well, what about the additional weight of the water that gets into your pack? And I'm like, yeah, that's fair. And some people would say, well, that would dry out. And I'm like, well, not if you continue to be in moist, cold circumstances with high humidity levels, it won't. And then also my camera bag got a little wet. It basically pissed down rain on us for 2 straight days, and especially during the whole walk out. And by the time I got out to the road, most of the stuff in my pack was wet. Now, nothing mission critical got wet. Everything that was important was inside a dry bag, other than my camera, and it was inside like this low pro kind of not insulated, but it kind of foamy pack. So it got moist inside, nothing got broken and it was fine, but I was kind of like, okay, this is a bit of a weakness in the system. The other thing is your backpack eats up a ton of room in your vestibule. I like to leave my backpack out at night so I have more room in my vestibule. Even if it doesn't rain, the dew on the backpack, you get wet shoulder straps and all the rest of it. So I was like, oh, it'd be really nice to have a rain cover because I could just cover my bag, flip it upside down, and I wouldn't have to worry about anything. It wouldn't eat up my vestibule space, and it wouldn't be wet and damp when I put it on in the morning. So I started looking around, and I know it might be silly, but like I run an XO pack, and I don't want to have like a Kuyu rain cover on an XO pack. And I know that's dumb, but maybe that's just my OCD. I didn't like it. So I started looking at non-hunting brand rain covers, and there's really not that many. And then randomly, I stumbled across MEC. I think it weighs 3.4 ounces. It's built to fit around a 100-liter pack. They have different sizes for those of you with smaller packs. Really nice elastic band, really good build quality. It was $40. Yeah, so I bought that, and I'm super happy with it. So going to bring that with me. Also, you could use it to catch rain. So if you were going to get rained on for a few days in a row and you were in camp and you didn't have water, you could set this out. And I've done that on sheep hunts before, use my buddy's rain cover to catch rain. Now, I will say some people, I used to wrap my backpack in my glassing tarp overnight instead of using this. Here's the thing, though. It's a pain in the ass to pack up every morning. So that was the other reason why that, while it works, is not the ideal solution. Now, in case I do camp out, I brought my Sea to Summit Telus TR2 tent. I brought Big Agnes Q-Core SLX pad, my Enlightened Equipment down bag, and a Big Agnes Q-Core pillow. So while I think the likelihood of bivvying out is minimal, I wanted to be prepared for it. So I will not be taking that with me every day. I also brought my 7x9 Z-Pax tarp. Now that is going to go in the pack every single day. I'm not going to throw a sleeping pad or a sleeping bag in the pack. But if I did get somewhere and it was getting dark and I was right on top of bulls and I did need to spend the night, I will have some puffy clothes with me. I could quite easily throw up the 7x9 tarp, grab a bunch of spruce boughs, make a little bed, and curl up there for the night. It wouldn't be the most comfortable thing in the world, but I would certainly survive. And if it means being on bulls in the morning, then so be it. So that's kind of like the emergency bivy system, is the 7x9 foot tarp. Now for the back of the truck, years ago, back in 2019, when I did my road trip down to New Mexico for my elk, I had this foamy place in Vancouver make me up a folding sleeping pad for the back of the truck. So it's kind of that 4-inch thick, medium to high density foam. Think about that as like three squares, and maybe the squares are something like, you know, 2 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet. And then those three squares are all upholstered in a way that they kind of Z fold, one of those Z seats that you sit on from Therm-a-Rest do, so that it allows you to stack all three squares on top of each other. But then when you unfold it, it turns into a long rectangle that's, I don't know, maybe 6 foot, 6 foot, 2 inches long, something like that. So fits in the back of the truck, doesn't take up much room. But here's the thing I've learned doing these hunting trips. If I have to inflate and deflate my sleeping pad at the truck every day because I need it in the truck and then I might need it in the bush, that friction will cause me to not do that, and I'll look for other solutions. Like, for example, if I had to do that and I was driving through town, I'm like, ah, I'll just go get a hotel. This seems like a pain in the ass. I'm going to have a bunch of shit to clean up in the morning. But because I have this folding foam mattress, a lot of that friction is gone. So when I decide to pull over, I literally stack two coolers, slide one tote to the side, unfold this foamy, flip my my quilt out on top of it, and then I bring a real pillow for the truck, an inflatable pillow for bivy hunting. throw my pillow down there, and I'm good to go. It probably takes me 3 minutes to get ready for bed. And that way, if I'm on a drive, even if I just need a power nap, I'll climb in the back for 25 minutes. No problem. Very low friction. Super comfortable. It's also significantly more comfortable than an inflatable sleeping pad. So there's the sleep system for both the backcountry and at the truck. Hang on, we gotta flip pages here. I brought the gear list printed out so I can have it in the truck while I was doing this podcast. So now we're gonna get into the clothing that is worn. So my top base layer will be the Stone Glacier Avro synthetic hoodie in double XL. My bottom base layer will be the Stone Glacier Chinook boxers in XL. My pants on the bottom will be Stone Glacier De Havilland light pants in XL with the knee pads. For hat, I'm still going to wear my Sitka ball cap. It seems to be the best hunting cap I can find. I'm still looking for another solution, but I haven't found a better one than that. Footwear, I'm going to wear my Schnee's Beartooth, my go-to for an all-purpose hiking boot. And yes, I cleaned them, put them on the boot dryer to warm them up, and treated them with Obenhaus LP before I left. I do that before every single hunt. I'll be wearing Darn Tough Overcalf light socks. And I did bring trekking poles, but I don't think I'm going to use them. I just don't see... Yeah, it's not crazy hilly where I'm going. And I brought the Ape Ultra Gaiters again. I forget what the Ultra ones are called. I think he's going to be releasing these shortly here in the new year. I'll keep you guys in the loop. So for clothing that is packed, I'm running the Stone Glacier Cirque jacket, which is kind of an equivalent to the Ambient hoodie. I'm very interested to check it out. It's a full zip. And it doesn't have, it's not really grid fleece. I need to research what type of insulation it is. And then I have the Stone Glacier Grooming jacket. I had this for years. This down jacket is very impressive. It is incredibly warm, but it is subject to the same faults as most down products are. And it's not great for super wet hunts. And this hunt is not looking to be wet at all. So I did bring my Sitka Dew Point pants as back. Oh, and I should say my rain jacket up top is going to be the Stone Glacier M5. I don't have Stone Glacier rain pants. So I brought the Sitka Dew Points just in case. Again, it's not... slated to be that cold. It's not slated to be that wet. So I shouldn't need to worry about it. I brought two different pairs of gloves. Well, I actually brought three different pairs of gloves. I brought a pair of mechanics gloves. They're some of my favorite gloves. They work with touch screens. They still allow some finger dexterity. They're good when you're in wet or like craggy, kind of rocky or thorny, you know, climbing conditions. I also brought a pair of like rubber dipped Atlas gloves. These are some of my favorite gloves in the woods. And when I was a forestry engineer, I would just pack three pairs of those every day. And I would change it each break. We always had morning coffee, lunch, and afternoon coffee. And I would normally make the first pair last me to lunch. And then I would change again at afternoon coffee. And there are no perfect gloves. I'm going to be looking at testing a whole lot of gloves here coming up in the near future. But those Atlas ones that are half dipped in rubber, I really like those. They're a very versatile glove. And then I also brought my, I think they're called the, They're either Stormfront or Blizzard gloves from Sitka. They're like a Gore-Tex shell with a fleece liner glove, and I also brought a pair of merino liners, and I brought those for riding the quad. I plan to do a lot of early morning and late night quad rides, and sometimes it can get, you know, pretty aching on your hands, and it is going to be an archery hunt, so the last thing I would want is to hop off the quad at the end of the trail and just happen to have a shot opportunity on an elk and then have my hands betray me because they're all cold and numb. So I did bring those for driving the quad. Optics and camera gear. So I did bring a spotting scope. I will tell you, I think that the odds of me using it are about 1 in 100. However, if I am, you know, lucky enough to kill an elk within the first half of the hunt, I do hope to spend the second half of the hunt hunting something else, whether that be mule deer, whether I run back up north and see if I can squeeze in a couple more days chasing sheep, I don't know. But even if I don't need a spotting scope for elk, I was like, well, maybe you'll need it for something else, so bring it with you. So we're at the Kawa 66. As always, I'm running my Swarovski Pure 12x42, the NL Pure 12x42 binos. So I also noted this on Instagram, but if you don't follow me there, you won't have heard this, but I'm putting two bino harnesses head-to-head. I'm running a Catamount Gear and a Kuyu. Catamount had to swap out a couple different pieces on me, and in fact, I'm even switching up to a medium bino harness because of a couple of issues. So while I wait for Catamount to get me those updated pieces of gear, I decided let's run the Kuyu. At first glance, I'm pretty impressed with this Kuyu. I gotta be honest with you. The phone holster is phenomenal. And just the overall kind of fit and function of the pack, I really like it so far. But again, that's just for me wearing it at home. So don't run out and buy one because you think Jay said it's the best bino harness. I'm definitely not saying that. Leupold RX 1200 TBR rangefinder. Been running it for a couple of years. Love it. It's nothing special. It's like $200, but it does angle compensation for archery. And then you can load up a load profile and then just dial yardage for your rifle. And so that's very beneficial. And then the AZAC tripod with ball head. So I'm kind of doing like a back and forth with the AZAC and the Tricer. I took the Tricer on the sheep hunt, and now I'm bringing the AZAC on the elk hunt. And then hopefully by the time I get home, I will have enough data to do a head-to-head comparison of the two of those. And then for digiscoping, as always, I brought my phone scope. All right. Let's get over to the last page here. We're almost done. Weapon of choice, my Hoyt RX-7 Ultra. Not sure if I noted already, but this will be an archery hunt. I will be hunting in rifle season. Just my own personal preference. I prefer to archery hunt elk in the rut than hunt them with a bow, than with hunt them with the gun. I'm not above hunting them with a gun. And, you know, if I'm not sure where I stand on this, like, do I do bow or nothing? Run it right up to the last minute of the last day, and no matter how good of an opportunity, no matter how good of a bull I see that I could have shot with a rifle, I don't go get a rifle and shoot him. I still got to decide that. Like, part of me is thinking, I mean, man, I'll try the best I can, but if I did it the last day, you know, and I haven't taken anything and somebody offers me access to their uncle's, you know, ag field where I can go shoot a bull with a rifle from some hay bales. Would I do that? I don't know. I guess I'll have to see how I feel at the time. For now, I'm just going to focus on getting one with the bow. For camera gear, I have a Sony A1 with a Rode Video Micro. On that, I got a 24 to 70 F2.8 G Master second generation, and I also brought 14mm F1.4 G Master second generation lens that I'll leave at the truck. A variety of SD cards. I got a GoPro Hero 11, Insta360. Yes, I will be filming this hunt, and yes, I think I have some interesting creative ways to solo film an elk hunt while capturing the action that happens at the kill. Whether or not it all works out still remains to be seen, but I have a plan. So, fingers crossed. All right, some, you know, miscellaneous gear I've got here. As always, I bring my 3/4 length Therm-a-Rest Z-Lite. So I buy a Therm-a-Rest closed cell foam sleeping pad. And then I cut like a section that's like maybe half of it actually. It says 3/4 here, but it's probably closer to half. It's 6 little folding strips. Cutting the square that is big enough to sit on, like just big enough to sit on, while functional and while saves weight, isn't the most practical. Sometimes you need a little more room. Sometimes it's nice to lay down for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's nice to fold that thing in half if you're on particularly like rocky ground and have a bit more cushion. So I bring a slightly bigger one. I brought my Possibles pouch with a variety of stuff in it. Bunch of hunting licenses so I can kill whatever I can. I brought 2 different processing knives. I have a bigger knife by Bruce Culberson. I cut up my elk last year with his skeletonized Alpine knife, and he kind of gave me shit for it, saying that's kind of more of like a sheep or at most a deer knife, and that, you know, I should have used a bigger knife for my elk. So he sent me one. And then I also have a replaceable blade shell piece from Hut 2, this BC company that they sent me. So I'll kind of play with both of those and see which one I like better. Now, normally I run the carnivore game bags, like the ultralight boned out meat bags, the rewashable ones, but I have my quad with me this time. So the goal will be to get all the meat to the quad. And sometimes the easiest way to do that is to leave it on the bone. And I had a really tough time fitting those quarters into those bags bone in last year. So I brought the kind of classic Alaskan game bags. I brought my other bags as backup. And those other ones don't work so great for things that aren't a quarter, like your back strap, your neck, because they lack structure. The bag just kind of flip-flops all over the place. And so I did bring some backup carnivore game bags just in case. Driving past a cop. It's the first time I drove past a cop with the helmet on, with my headphones on. Well, you can talk on a phone while driving a car, so I see no reason why you can't talk on a headset doing a podcast. For those of you wondering where I am just passing the turnoff for the Hat Creek Ranch. If you've ever driven up this side, you'll know exactly where I'm talking about. I just went through Cache Creek a little bit ago and probably coming up here to 70 Mile pretty soon, which really has nothing other than a gas station, 100 miles the next place where I can get decent cup of coffee. And well, I'm not even gonna say decent, Tim Hortons is garbage, but at least it's hot and reliable. Okay, moving on. For calling gear, still using all Phelps stuff. I wanted to try and get some other stuff, but I just couldn't make it happen in time. I know how to use the Phelps stuff. I'm comfortable with it. So I have 2 different bugle tubes, a handful of diaphragms. I normally try and bring some cow calls and mouth calls and the rest of it, but I never end up using them. So I'm just going to stick with my diaphragm. It's what I know. Brought my Steripen. I also have a 20-liter jug of clean drinking water in the back of the truck to fill up with every morning. Garmin 66i with the Backroad map books attached. I also recently bought a Garmin Fenix 7 Solar Sapphire Pro. And so I'm going to be doing some testing with its mapping functionality compared to the 66i. I brought my iPhone, GSI Microlate 500 milliliter coffee mug. I brought two battery banks, a 20,000 milliamp hour and a 10,000 milliamp hour, because if I'm just heading out for the day or even 2 or 3 days, I don't need 20,000 milliamp hours. Like, that would be carrying more gear than is required. So I brought the 10,000 as backup, and I can use the 20,000 at the truck if I need to. Brought a Nalgene with a human gear cap. Got a cell booster in the truck, so hopefully I can text and whatnot when I come back to the truck every night, check in with the family. And multiple bottles of Wind Checker. Now for my cook kit, this is the first real hunt while I'll be testing my new stove system. So I had the regulator go on a jet fuel or a jet boil on my sheep hunt. And what would happen is just intermittently the fuel would cut out. I'd have to take everything apart, put it all back together, and then it would work again. And then intermittently it would cut out. And I emailed them about it. They're like, yeah, it's a regulator issue. I'm like, sweet, can I replace it? And they're like, yeah, $85. I'm like, wait a minute, what? And they're like, yeah, we only have a limited warranty and it's only good for 1 year. And you're over that, so beat it. And I was just like, and this is the second time this has happened to me, both with regulator issues, both with Jetboil products. They were both Jetboil Minimos. And I just, that level of reliability is just not good enough for me. So I'm getting off the Jetboil platform, and I wanted something smaller and lighter because that's what the Jetboil was supposed to be. I have the MSR reactor for more late season stuff, and I actually have an XGK, which is like a liquid fueled stove for the really, really late winter stuff. And I needed an ultralight system for those kind of like more moderate months. So I got an MSR pocket rocket, and then I got a Tokes 550 milliliter titanium, kind of like a coffee cup, kind of like a little mini pot, but it's big enough to fit one of the 100 gram canisters of isobutane. And so the canister goes inside that, then I put the lid on and I put it in this little baggie, and then the stove goes inside this little kind of red plastic clip thing. And the whole thing, I just looked this up. I think it weighs 3.8 ounces or something. Like, it's insane. And the Jetboil system weighed 12 ounces. So I figured it out and I saved something like 7 to 8 ounces. So it's like half a pound. And functionally speaking, both stoves do the same thing. So that'll be interesting to check that out. Brought some other, you know, lighters, spoons, water bladders, nothing exciting. Now, the last thing that I'll mention on here that I brought was trail cameras. I'm still not 100% sure if I'm going to carry them with me. They're not cell phone cameras. I know you can't use cell phone cameras in British Columbia during hunting season, but these are just regular old school cameras. And what I'm thinking is I might just throw one or two in my day bag. And then if I come across a wallow and I think to myself, wow, this looks really fresh, I could always just drop a cam, and then I can go back in a couple of days if I'm unable to turn up elk. And if I have to, I could always just leave the cam. These things are like $75 on Amazon, and it would make a cool little experiment to come back and grab it next year. So yeah, like I mentioned, I haven't 100% decided what I'm going to do, but I'm seriously considering carrying a couple cameras a day. All right. There's the gear list for this particular hunt. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, jay@mindfulhunter.com. If you could take a moment and engage with the content, it would greatly help kind of push this up in the algorithm. Like, comment, share, subscribe, leave a review on your podcast platform of choice, anything like that. Always appreciate it. And until next time, thanks for tuning in.